Hi, I'm Alex Bellinger, and this is Small Biz Pod on Wednesday, the 22nd of April. Well, it's our annual budget special at Small Biz Pod today, and we have a great roundup of all the issues that affect small businesses, startups, and entrepreneurs as a result of today's announcements by the Chancellor of the Exchequer, Alistair Darling. And a lot to cover, some great insight from real entrepreneurs, from groups representing small businesses, from two politicians, the two shadow ministers for business and enterprise, Lauralee Burt of the Lib Dems and Mark Prisk of the Conservative Party, and a range of other opinion that'll help you get to grips with what the budget and the current economy, to be honest, means for small businesses today. All of which can be a little bit scary. The economy at the moment is pretty scary. The amount of government debt is pretty scary. But nevertheless, right at the end of the show, we have a really uplifting and great interview, book review rather, by another Small Biz Pod listener, this time by Ian Crawford, who is an Australian listener, and a great review by Ian, so stay tuned for that. And I also got an appropriately scary piece of music to conclude, but very, very entertaining. It's by Zombie Girl, and it's called Blood, Brains, Rock and Roll. So stay tuned for that too. But since we've got a lot to pack in, let's get straight on to the interviews on the budget 2009.
Mr. Deputy Speaker, every country has been hit by this global recession, but we have confidence in Britain's future and in this country's strength. You can grow your way out of a recession, you can't cut your way out of it. We've made our choice to help people now to build Britain's future, and I commend this budget to the House.
Okay, so now let's hear from somebody who will really have got into the nitty-gritty of the budget and definitely knows their stuff, and that is Dave Mountsey, who is a tax partner at Smith & Williamson, one of the big accountancy and business service firms. First of all, what's your considered opinion of the benefit or otherwise of this budget for SMEs?
Well, I think the Chancellor is obviously aware that businesses are sort of suffering in the current environment, so he's tried to sort of ease that pain where he can, but bearing that in mind, he hasn't got much to give away, so most of the measures are relatively sort of small. I mean, he's deferred the increase in the small corporate tax rate, so that will remain at 21%. He has increased the level of capital allowances available for new investment. Currently, that's set at 20% for most categories of assets that a business might acquire. But for the year that commences, or for the current tax year that we're in, that will go up to 40%. So it's a doubling of the allowances that can be claimed. But although that sounds good for small businesses, that probably isn't as useful as it sounds, because they will already be entitled to the £50,000 annual investment allowance. So for most small businesses, that probably means they won't get extra allowances because their capital expenditure will be already within the 100% limit of relief that they get under the annual investment allowance. He's also enhanced the loss carryback claims that companies can make. A company can carry back a loss for 1 year. So if you make a loss in a year, you can carry that back and offset against the profit made in the prior year and get a tax refund on the tax that you paid previously. He did announce in the pre-budget report previously that he would give an enhancement to that loss carryback capacity by allowing you to carry back a further £50,000 to an earlier year. He's now effectively enhanced that further by saying any company that makes a loss in either the year to November 2009 or to November 2010, £50,000 of each of the loss in that year could be carried back for up to 3 years. So if a company made, say, a profit last year, has made a loss this year, and then makes another loss next year and the year after, those two later years, you could carry some of that loss back and get a repayment in respect of tax made in the last year that you were profitable. So potentially that's quite good news for small businesses.
But how many, again, I mean, there both in the actually in the stimulus packages and the pre-budget report and indeed in this budget, a lot of the measures probably don't affect that many small businesses. I mean, how many businesses are going to benefit, for example, from that carry back?
I think the pattern will be that a lot of businesses, clearly the year before last, probably would have made a profit, and now that we're in recession, they are possibly going to move into making losses. So I think there are quite a lot of companies that will benefit from it, but the amount of the benefit in terms of the actual stimulus to the economy is probably small. It's difficult to gauge the precise number of companies that will be involved, but I think there are a fair few that would, you know, get some benefit from the arrangement that he's put in place.
Yeah. Now, there was quite a lot in the budget that was kind of carbon budget focused, as it were. There was quite a lot of funding and incentives for businesses focused in the sort of green technology, energy areas. Are those initiatives significant?
Well, I think the government obviously views the green sector as being very important for the future dynamism of the UK economy and also helping to contribute to sort of carbon reduction, etc. And clearly it's an area where research and development could well make the UK more of a leader in that field than it has been historically. In fairness, the level of sort of stimulus to that sector is not huge given the size of the economy, but I think it should be welcomed that there are some measures there, but it probably doesn't impact that many businesses because obviously most businesses aren't involved in that sector, but it's obviously aimed at trying to get some of the startup type companies that would like to be more involved in that sector off the ground, bearing in mind that often they're putting in place technologies that appear to be more expensive, and in a recession it's difficult to persuade people to pay more for technology when times are hard. So if they can increase incentives to get people to take up that type of technology or improve the research on it to bring costs down, then hopefully that will stimulate companies that are in that sector.
Talking of incentives, do you consider the 50%, the increase of the top rate tax band to 50% to be potentially a disincentive for, you know, our kind of highest flying entrepreneurs and business people?
I think ultimately the statistics show that that probably affects 1% of earners. So in that sense, it doesn't have such a dramatic impact. But anything that possibly changes what's viewed as the entrepreneurial side of the economy could potentially be dangerous for, you know, getting the UK back into a sort of growth mode. But I guess most people have realised that with all the borrowing that the government has made, that there's got to be payback at some stage. I think the only problem with the government sort of numbers that they've mentioned is that 50% rate isn't actually going to raise that much income. I believe the additional revenue raised from it was estimated to be about £1 billion. And when you consider that the amount the government is borrowing, it's only a relatively small part of that. So I think it really heralds additional tax increases across the board. It's just that they've only been brave enough at this stage to say that they will apply to the very high earners.
From your perspective, and obviously you speak to and have clients, many of whom are SMEs and many of whom are growing businesses, what's your sense of A, their reaction to this budget, and B, their feeling in terms of the current economic position?
Well, I think in overview, the key has to be that clearly there hasn't been much given away to them this budget, and I think very few expected too much be given away because of the difficult economic environment that we're in. I think the most important thing for them is ultimately getting stability back in the economy and getting to the stage where, you know, the economy starts to grow again. Obviously, the verdict is out on that at the moment. The government has clearly announced huge amounts of borrowing, and you know, the danger of that is that ultimately, when the economy does start to grow, that borrowing has to be brought back into, you know, rein, so to speak. And at that stage, the various measures that may be brought in could increase taxes on business. The danger is whether that would in any way impede future growth.
Dave Mountsey, thanks ever so much.
My name's Andrew Cave. I'm the head of policy at the Federation of Small Businesses. The Federation of Small Businesses represents 216,000 small businesses around the UK.
Now, clearly, you must be very upset by the lack of any significant measures to support small businesses in this budget.
Well, I think, as a number of people have said, it's a missed opportunity on the part of the government. We feel that the government have ignored the concerns of the small business community in this budget. It's supposed to be a budget about jobs, but it's failed to help the very businesses that create the lion's share of employment in this country.
Having said that, the Chancellor simply didn't have any money left, did he, to do anything significant? I mean, there are all sorts of cash flow measures that most small businesses and that most groups representing those small businesses would like to have seen happen, but there was just no money. I mean, like any business, the books just don't balance, do they?
That's true, but if you actually look at the proposals that have been put forward by the Federation of Small Businesses and other small business groups, we're not calling for the government to spend a lot of money to support small business. There are a lot of measures that they could introduce that don't require additional spending. The main one, perhaps, is having the small business rates relief applied automatically. That would deliver £400 million to small businesses across the UK at no expense to the taxpayer. That money is already sitting within the Treasury, ring-fenced for small business rates relief. But because it's not applied automatically, it just sits there. That would make a real difference for a lot of small businesses in the UK.
And that, I hadn't appreciated that. It is actually ring-fenced. I just assumed it was a wheeze to avoid people claiming it so they could use it for other stuff.
Not at all. And this is the irony of it. It sits there. It's not being used for anything else. It wouldn't call on additional sort of increasing taxation in any way to pay for it. So we don't quite understand why the government hasn't been able to deliver that. I mean, there are other proposals, such as tackling the issue of late payments. We would like to see a much more robust policy adopted by the government to tackle late payments. At the moment, the average business in the UK, small business in the UK, is owed over £30,000 through late payments. Now, if measures could be brought in place to actually tackle that, again, that's not something that is going to cost the Treasury any more money, but it would make a big difference to the small business community.
Perhaps more worrying in some respects than specific measures aimed at SMEs is the broader economic outlook for small businesses in this country right now. There was a lot of talk about that we're basically being at the bottom of a recession, and the Chancellor was talking about us growth appearing towards the end of this year and certainly into next year, and then seeing 3.5% growth by 2011. Now, if that was the case, if he's proved right, then I suspect most small businesses are going to be surviving and relatively happy. But they sound very optimistic, those projections.
They do sound optimistic, and talking to our members, they're certainly not as optimistic as that. However, there are success stories out there. We do get a feel that it's not getting worse. It's not getting better yet, but the conditions within which our members have to operate is not deteriorating at the same rate as it was, say, last October when we had the pre-budget report. That's why we're keen to see measures in place now that will help businesses stay afloat, keep people in the jobs that they've got at the moment so that they don't have to increase, you know, unemployment further, just to see us through, and hopefully this, you know, the more positive outlook will kick in next year.
Okay, Andrew Kay from the FSB, thanks ever so much.
Thank you very much.
Okay, well, enough of the advice from all of our experts. What do real business owners think about the budget in 2009. I got on the line now Joe White, who is Chief Operating Officer of Gandhi, a web hosting and domain name business.
Hello, Alex.
What do you reckon? A scant reward for, scant anything really for small businesses, unless you're loss-making.
Well, that may prove to be something which is helpful to small businesses. I mean, I think, as you say, the budget itself wasn't particularly surprising or inspiring. It was reasonably measured and probably appropriate to the situation that we're in, as in that there wasn't a lot of room that the Chancellor had to do much, given the public spending constraints. But the small bone to small businesses about this loss-making carryback wasn't really so much new, given it was announced last year. It's just been extended by 1 year.
Yeah.
But one of the major concerns, I think, of small businesses during this next year is actually going to be cash flow. And so these are one of the areas where that could help, in that you can get your check back from the Treasury as soon as they're quickly process it. But the other thing which is useful, also pre-announced, was actually the business support service, whereby talking directly to the revenue, you can actually defer payments of PAYE, VAT, or other taxes. So again, if you can get that 30, 60-day extension, that could make a quite substantial difference to your operating cash flow, which may allow you to see these things out.
But in essence, as you rightly point out, all those were the kind of stimulus package measures, weren't they, that have already been announced?
That's right. Darling's main task during this was to bring his forecasts in line with external estimates, so this is not to spook the markets and give enough recognition that they're facing up to what's going on. And I think the messages to businesses everywhere really is that this is going to be deep and it is going to be reasonably long. I thought his end of the year recovery was probably optimistic. Q4 never sounds like a great time to be starting new business investments or gearing up for growth. It's more likely to be spring next year when things will start kicking off. But the message to businesses really from this is that the survival mode that some have been in for some time now is going to need to last a bit longer. So that's really the thing that should be top of their minds and of course top of ours.
3.5% growth in 2011 sounds remarkably optimistic, doesn't it?
It does sound punchy. I mean, it's always difficult to know what's going to happen with these situations. I mean, of course, Brown, when he was Chancellor, seemed to always be beating the market forecasts with his assumptions then. But it does seem optimistic. I mean, if you have a structural change in the economy taking place with a bloated and overdeveloped banking sector being pulled back in, you also have an issue of overcapacity having to be brought back down, and generally us all facing up to repaying this debt. I think that does sound optimistic. Not impossible, but I think we'd all be very pleasantly surprised to see that. Certain sectors may well see that. I mean, we're lucky enough to be an online business selling tools to allow other people to trade online, so we're actually seeing reasonable growth at the moment. But many of our customers who are also small businesses certainly have concerns over how their trade will develop, and they see online as a way of generating new channels.
Well, what are your main pieces of advice for business? If we are going to be, as the budget seems to indicate, in for a longer recession and a deep one at that, what's your business doing to counteract that, to manage that?
Well, I think the main advice really would be to take decisions early and be realistic about what it will take to survive. If you're going to be loss-making during 2009, but you believe for perfectly good reasons that it'll be okay afterwards as the recovery takes hold, and that's great, I think you need to make agreements with both suppliers and employees to try and keep the business going. If that means a kind of general wage reduction for 1 year as opposed to cutting jobs, that might be a better thing. In negotiations with your own suppliers, of course, you need to bear in mind that they're businesses too, and if they get taken out, it may well affect your business. So I think there's opportunity for collaboration here, particularly with small businesses, to make sure that they pay each other on time.
Yeah.
They share the burden of this, and then I think more will get through standing. I think if everyone goes out all for themselves to a certain extent, you may find inadvertent consequences of people you rely on getting taken out. If everyone tries to squeeze their own cash positions and extend their credit and so on, it may turn a bit ugly. So I think working together is going to be important to get out of this. And making sure that you take advantage of what schemes are in place, whether it is the business support services or reclaiming these taxes. You know, most businesses have accountants that can help them do that sort of thing, and it may be that it costs a couple of hundred quid to check your position on that and potentially get some money back.
Good advice, Joe. Thanks very much.
No problem at all.
Right. I have Mark Prisk on the line now, who is the small business shadow and the Conservative Party. Mark, you must be somewhat disappointed at the relative lack of anything, really, for small businesses in this budget.
I think the
budget really has ignored the needs of small businesses. For example, there's no help with business rates. There's nothing there about corporation tax bills. And these are the most important charges and levies that really sit on most small firms' overhead, the kind of fixed overhead that really pinches in a tough recession.
And it's cash flow, of course, that is the biggest headache. And again, other than, you know, allowing companies that are already making losses to reclaim some of the tax on profits, that there's not a lot there, is there, to ease cash flow?
No, there isn't. There are nasty little quirks hidden in the small print, as usual. Most businesses will not be happy with a 2p rise in fuel duty that hits most small businesses. And then, for example, we find at the back of the Red Book, which is the document that hosts all the information, that actually they're jacking up the gaming duty by £20 million. Well, we all know what's happening for most pubs and clubs locally. They're under immense pressure. We're seeing, you know, pubs closing on a regular basis at the moment. This extra £20 million in tax on gaming duty on amusement machines is just another blow for that kind of small business.
So what would you have done in place if the Conservative government had inherited this particular economic nightmare, for want of a better
sure.
word?
Yeah.
What would you have done to support small businesses right now?
Well, looking at small businesses, we've tried to set out some practical measures that would make a difference. Number one is to get a national loan guarantee scheme so that we underpin bank lending. You know, most small firms that talk to me really struggle with the plethora of government schemes. They're not sure whether they're eligible, whether their sector or type of business is eligible, and indeed many of the banks don't know either. What you need is a simple, single national loan guarantee to get that credit flowing. So that's the first step. I think the second step then is to do some practical things to do with cash flow. So, for example, we would make the existing small business rate relief scheme automatic in England. It is in Wales, but it isn't in England. And what that means is two things. First of all, strip away all the red tape of having to apply for something for which you are eligible, a classic New Labour sort of thing. You know, yes, you're entitled to this, but we'd like you to fill in 400 pages of paperwork first, if you'll be so kind. Strip all that away and make sure they get the money straight away. That's the crucial part, because if they have to apply, if they have to delay, it affects the cash flow. And it's worth up to £1,100 per business. But there's more that you can do as well. I think we've argued very strongly that the smallest of employers need help. That's why we've looked to cut the national insurance bill for the smallest of employers, those with, say, fewer than five employees, cut that by 1% over a six-month period. That would make, again, a crucial difference to the bottom line. So there are a number of other measures we've argued as well. Help with, for example, with apprenticeships by giving small businesses £2,000 per apprentice, but really focus now, at this moment, on the short term. And that means help with cash flow, help with working capital, and make sure that the tax and regulatory system is as simple and as fair as you can do.
Where would you find the money to do that, though?
Well, the measures I've suggested are fully funded, and we recognise that we're going to have to balance the books, and that's why we've argued very clearly that the need to balance the books over the period is going to be crucial, because the problem we have at the moment is that there was a lot of analysis in the budget today by the Chancellor about the scale of the problem, the fact that they're borrowing £175 billion this year. What they weren't able to do was to come forward and say, well, we'll tackle the expenditure. Classically, they said, we recognize, for example, there are efficiency savings that can be made, but we're not going to do them until next year or the year after. Well, why? We need to bring that forward, get the state into a balanced situation, better balanced than currently at present, and then make sure that with that balance, we actually are able to make sensible small measures that just reduce the overheads for smaller firms.
So you'd only be able to introduce those measures that we've just talked about after the public, you know, the government books, as it were brought closer into balance.
No, the ones I've mentioned to you today are things that we've already announced, not just today, but actually beforehand.
Yeah.
What we are arguing is that these are affordable within the total costs, because we recognise so those are fully costed within the existing budget. So within the existing total budget of the Her Majesty's government, these measures that we've suggested can be delivered. Now, in the future, we want to then look at corporation tax and other matters, but we have to do immediate actions, and that's what we're focused on at the moment.
OK, Mark Brisk, thank you very much.
Thank you.
OK, so I've got on the line now for a Lib Dem perspective on the budget in terms of how it impacts small businesses. Laura Lee Burt, who is the Small Business Shadow Minister for Small Business and Enterprise. Laura Lee, welcome to Small Biz Pod.
Hi, Alex. How are you doing?
I'm good. What did you think? What's your reaction to the budget today in terms of small businesses?
Well, a bit like the curate's egg, you know, it was good in parts. I was disappointed that a lot of the things that I was hoping to see weren't there. I was hoping on behalf of the building industry that we'd see a VAT cut on building materials for refurbishment and that type of thing. We've been campaigning quite hard for a 5% VAT, because that would obviously encourage building and also help the environment as well. What I was delighted to see, and might have slipped through some of your listeners' net, is trade credit insurance. The government's going to match that. And that's been a real problem for a lot of small businesses who've had their trade credit insurance reduced.
Yep.
Or even withdrawn, and that can spell the death knell. And there's a monopoly of a small monopoly of companies who have this trade credit insurance, and they're a bit like fair weather friends. You know, they give you the umbrella when the sun's shining. So I hope that that initiative will do a lot. I'm delighted to see scrappage coming in. And I think that's not just for big businesses. There are a lot of small businesses who are in the supply chain at second, third and fourth tier for the car industry. Disappointed not to see the £5,000 trade-in for electric vehicles extended to commercial vehicles, because let's face it, some of our commercial vehicles can be some of the most polluting that you've ever seen. So they could have done that, and that would have helped companies who've got electric vehicles, you know, ready to roll off the production line now, like the struggling LDV in Birmingham. It is a very mixed bag. Pleased to see that the capital allowance rate has doubled to 40%. That's really good. Pleased to see that, you know, companies who are loss-making can continue to reclaim tax made on profits for the last 3 years, although I don't know how many companies that will actually affect. On the whole, some quite helpful things, but big things that have been missed, like, for example, the VAT cut of to 12.5%. Why didn't they use? There's over £8 billion worth of money, which there's a large consensus right the way across the business world is not actually making any effect at all. You know, so that money could have been used for all sorts of really useful things to get the economy going. Things like in the building industry, social housing, insulation, etc. Disappointed as well that empty property rate relief was not extended or made automatic for companies whose rate relief was only £15,000 or less.
How are businesses in your constituency feeling about the economy generally? Do they consider it do they and you consider us to be at the bottom of a recession, or are we still got a long way before we can even remotely start climbing out?
I think they're very, very busy firefighting right now. I don't know any that are sort of standing back and looking and taking a particularly long view. They're focused on the short term. Instead of looking at their cash flow situation on a monthly or even quarterly basis, they're now doing it weekly and even daily. You know, just keeping their heads above water, trying to manage things on a day-to-day basis. So I'm not sure that they've got any more clue than the Chancellor of the Exchequer, to be perfectly honest, just where we are, in terms of
Well, the Chancellor's saying that we're at the bottom of the recession, we come out of it towards the end of this year, and that we'll see 3.5% growth in 2011. So he's quite clear.
Yeah, but I mean, he was hopelessly optimistic in the pre-budget report in October as well.
Okay, and just before you go, I mean, you did outline earlier some of your, you know, your hopes and your disappointments. But what had the Liberal Democrats been in a power sharing government right now? If the Conservatives after a hung election,
we were in charge.
Okay, if you were in charge. What would you have done to create a situation where small businesses would have been raising the roof and saying, "Great job, Lib Dems. We always knew you could do it."
Okay, well, all of those things I've mentioned specifically in relation to business, but I suppose the key thing is putting money back in the pockets of lower and middle income families. Because if people have got more money to spend, you know, then that gets the whole economy moving. We've introduced a tax, our own tax budget in the last week, which basically means that people's income tax bills would be lowered by £700 because we would abolish income tax on the first £10,000 of income. And, you know, that would just help so many people who would be then feel a lot more secure. And confidence, I think, is a hugely important thing. So people with money to spend will actually go out and spend it, and that will get the economy moving again.
And you'd find that despite a 300, 400, 500 billion black hole in the government coffers.
Well, I mean, the way that we'd pay for that specific policy is by closing the tax loopholes of the very rich and of companies, you know, who, if you've got an income, a high income, and you've got your own accountant, you know, who's there, whose just sole job in life it is to avoid your having to pay tax, you're paying less of your tax as a percentage of your income than the person who cleans your office. You know, I mean, how fair is that?
How much does that raise in reality?
Well, it's all costed and audited, so I can't go into every specific thing, the £10,000 is actually paid for by taking an aggressive action to clamp down on loopholes and exemptions that benefit the richest people and the biggest businesses.
Okay, Lauralee Burt.
A bit of a Robin Hood.
There we are. It sounds like old Labour to me. Lib Dems, the new old Labour. Anyway, it's been good to talk to you. Thanks for your time.
And you too. All the very best.
Now, I did look for a Labour or a government spokesperson to talk about this budget, but unfortunately that just didn't happen for various reasons, so I couldn't bring perfect balance to this political segment within the podcast. But clearly, Alistair Darling's, the Chancellor's views have been, you know, very clearly outlined in the budget itself. So I hope you will understand that omission. So, let's go for the last word on the budget in 2009 to a real entrepreneur, and hear from Rodri Ferrier, who is the co-founder of Bulldog, which is a men's grooming product, and they're a startup.
It's been quite an interesting afternoon.
Has it? Tell me why.
Well, when I say interesting, interesting in the sense that, you know, I think this has been possibly the biggest disappointment that we've seen in the last few years. I think we were quite excited to see what the Chancellor would do for small business, and it turns out he's going to do absolutely nothing.
Now, obviously, there was a lot announced previously in the pre-budget and stimulus packages, and basically the government ran out of money, didn't they?
That's absolutely right, and I think the Chancellor's forecast for growth in 2011 bouncing back to 3.5% are a fantasy.
Yeah.
So those debt figures will be substantially worse than he's predicting, and I think as a result, he'll be able to do even less than they're proposing right now. What struck me was, I think the figure announced was £1.7 billion to be spent on job centres why not spend a part of that money on actually creating some jobs, particularly through small businesses?
And how would that be done?
I don't know. You know, reduction in national insurance contributions for businesses under a certain size would have been very helpful.
Yeah.
Particularly, I think, at the margin where businesses are really struggling to hold on to staff. If you could free up, you know, what is effectively an employer tax on employing people, I think there would be a large number of businesses that would say, okay, well, we can keep on that extra employee that we were a little bit concerned about paying the salary of. So it's a bit disappointing, I think, in the way in which some of these funds are allocated, but I think you're absolutely right. He's run out of money, and I think they've pretty much run out of ideas as well.
The real concern I have is that a lot of people have been saying that we're probably pretty much at the bottom of where we are likely to go in terms of this recession. What's your feeling about that? As a startup entrepreneur, you're VC or angel funded. How does it feel being at the beginning of your entrepreneurial journey right now?
Well, I think the good news is it probably... if we can survive this, we can probably survive anything.
Yeah.
The question is, will we be able to survive it? I think we're naturally fairly optimistic people, and we're still very optimistic about our own business. But I think you're absolutely right. I think we're at an economy that's sort of at a knife edge. And what the estimate for this year was substantially higher than the negative 3.5% that he announced. So yeah, I don't see anything on the horizon that makes this economy much better, other than the fact that the pound was down a bit today, and maybe we can export our way out of it. But, you know, a large chunk of our exports are services, and we know that a large number of those are financial services. So I think, yeah, it's absolutely right. It could get a lot worse next year. So it's tough to be a startup in this climate, because I think whereas previously you might say, okay, we can push and push and push for growth, and if we need to go back for a further round of funding, we will go and do that. I think in the current climate, there is no funding, or if there is funding, it's a very small amount of funding for some very specific things. I think you've just got to be a lot more cautious, and you've also almost got to rein in your expectations. So I think we're probably not the only startup business out there who are saying, okay, let's hunker down a little bit for the next 12 to 24 months, which, again, I don't think is helpful, because I think in any other economic climate, startup businesses are really the engine of employment.
Indeed, I mean, and but you've got to make that runway of your initial investment last longer.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think there was I don't know whether you saw the presentation that went round from Sequoia Capital over in San Francisco.
Yeah, I did.
Right at the start of the credit crunch, when they were saying, right, cut deep and cut hard early, and burn as little cash as you can. Now, we're not in a position to make substantial cuts. We're only four people as it is.
Yeah.
But I definitely think we're in a position now where we are taking more of a hunker-down approach to the next 12 months and really trying to, you know, live absolutely within our means, which probably isn't a bad thing, because it does mean that you're focusing on building a truly sustainable business. So again, optimistically, I think it probably leaves us in pretty good shape.
Yeah, I think a lot of startups' minds will be very, very, very much focused on the business model and the cash, which they always should have been anyway. So maybe
to look
on the bright side, it's not all bad news.
No, exactly.
Okay, Rodri, thanks very much for your time.
Thanks a lot.
So there we are. I think that was a pretty rounded view, actually, of the budget and its impact on small businesses. Not a lot there. Much more of concern is the broader economic backdrop to business over the next few years. Be fascinating to see whether it's a question of hunkering down, as Bulldog seemed to suggest, or whether good times will come flowing back within the next 18 months or so. It remains to be seen, so fingers crossed. Anyway, on a slightly more positive note, let's go straight to this week's book review from a Small Biz Pod listener.
Hi there, Alex. Thanks for the opportunity to review this book for you. Today's review is about the book Starting and Running a Coaching Business, The Complete Guide to Setting Up and Managing a Coaching Practice by Ariane Ode. I must admit that when I first got this book, I rolled my eyes because I was of the assumption that this was just another book about how to be a good coach. I thought I was going to read about how to develop a relationship with clients, basically the personal skill set a coach needs to take into a coaching setting. I couldn't have been further from the truth. Overall, this is a sensational book for those people who are looking at starting a coaching business. And that is the key to this book. It's about starting and maintaining a coaching business. I have been coaching for about 3 years and would have loved to have this book to fast-track me through the painful minefield that I had to endure as I found my way in developing this business. Although it should be noted from the very beginning that this is a book for the beginning through to the limited experience, rather than the experienced business owner. A lot of the information is covered at the beginning level to cater for the true owner of the business startup. I must admit that I was very fortunate that I didn't put this book down after the first few pages though. I found the introduction little use and repetitive in nature. Now this isn't a great mindset to commence any book, but after I got past this section, the content was worthwhile. Before looking at some of the information covered, I would like to highlight the real strength of this book. So many how-to books discuss what should be done and how to do it, but the reader is rarely called to action. You know the feeling. You read a book and get all inspired about the content and tell yourself that you will definitely put these things into place as soon as you've finished reading. But as you contently place the book back on the shelf, almost instantly the motivation starts to fade. But not this book. Throughout the book, the author challenges the reader to take the content they have just read and put it into a context that makes sense to them. This is done through asking and requesting the reader to answer a number of questions in each chapter. I must admit that I didn't actually complete the questions, but just the simple act of reading them challenged a number of my thoughts and questioned some of the practices that I had put in place as I developed my business. I didn't always agree that the questions were the best to ask, but the simple fact that the questions that were there is a really large positive point for this book. Well, if the reader completes them, that is. A few points that jumped out at me were this. One. In the first chapter, there is considerable space dedicated to challenging the reasons and perceptions of people that are contemplating starting their own coaching business and becoming a sole trader. The best part of this section was the author highlighting that starting your own business isn't all fun times, but can be a significantly hard slog. Many books that I've read steer away from highlighting this, but not this book. And Ariane is not afraid in showing that this coaching business isn't all about fun and chats, but requires hard, prolonged work. This is a gutsy move for an author, and she should be congratulated for that. Too often, the term coaching is solely linked to people's perceptions of life coaching. As we clearly know, this couldn't be further from the truth. Furthermore, there seems to be a trend that people step into coaching roles that have little or no experience in it. Chapter 2 looks deeply into defining your coaching product. In addition, it investigates how to describe your coaching to potential clients. Both exceptional, valuable reading. Point 3. I found that one of the biggest changes for those people moving from employed to self-employed work is the ability to manage themselves in a less structured environment. Ariane walks through all the expected emotions a new business owner can feel while working alone. Furthermore, there is excellent guidance on how to deal with these ups and downs. Chapter 4, Selling and Marketing Your Business is an interesting chapter. Not only does it skillfully walk you through the steps of possible marketing strategies, it also links the way you view the process and then provides strategies for each of these perceptions. In doing this, it will clarify and make the reader aware of how they are approaching marketing and selling, and in doing so, increase the chance of introducing change that will positively impact their skills. Chapter 5, which is about developing your relationship with your client, is one of my favourite chapters. Once again, Ariane steps away from the rose-coloured view of the working world and injects a good dose of reality. Although this sounds a little scary from the surface, it provides the reader with what a coaching business can be like and provides skills to deal with these situations. Chapter 5 is about developing your relationship with your clients and is one of my favourite chapters. Once again, Ariane steps away from the rose-coloured view of the working world and injects a good dose of reality. Although this sounds a little scary from the surface, it provides the reader with what a coaching business can be like and provides skills to deal with these situations. Chapter 7 investigates the ongoing professional development needs of a coaching professional. The best part of this chapter is the sections on receiving and dealing with feedback. I've assisted numerous coaches over the years, and the common thing that I see is coaches that ask for feedback that provides them with all the warm and fuzzies, rather than the feedback they can use to improve their coaching. Ariane provides advice on when to and where to ask for feedback, but the greatest gem of information is that she provides the powerful questions to ask. Chapter 9 delves into the issue of confidentiality and professional standards. This is a powerful chapter that challenges the perceptions of coaches in regards to this vital issue. Ariane again skillfully guides the readers through the different aspects of confidentiality and the development of the reader's philosophy in this area. This is something every single coach needs to regularly investigate as they progress through the coaching world. Although all the other chapters provide worthwhile pearls of wisdom, the chapters highlighted are the ones that stood out for me. Coaching is one of those industries that has been the flavour of the month for a while now, and as such has attracted numerous people to the industry. As with other businesses, there are fantastic coaches and coaches that are giving the industry a bad name. This book is a great starting point to develop a foundation for all coaches that are investigating establishing a coaching business for themselves. If you are looking for a book that shows you how to coach, then you're looking in the wrong place. This is purely for the beginning to new coaching business owner. My favourite aspect of the book is the honesty in which the subject is approached. I must admit that I thought that the reality was a little over top at some stages and would scare a lot of prospective business owners away. But taking a step back, you quickly realise that it isn't over the top at all. It is actually the truth on starting a business. If you are a beginning to new owner of a coaching business and want to be more professional in the delivery of your business, then Starting and Running a Coaching Business, The Complete Guide to Setting Up and Managing a Coaching Practice by Ariane Ode is the one book you should get. Until next time, this is Ian Crawford from Candor Training and Consultancy.
Well, there you go. Thanks ever so much for that really dynamic and excellent book review. Ian, superb. Thanks ever so much. Very, very welcome to do another review in the future, as indeed are all those who have submitted book reviews or anyone who wants to. As I always say, send me an email at alex@smallbizpod.co.uk. And if you would like to review a book, I'll send you one. And all you have to do is send a 4 or 5 minute audio review, and that will be it. So thanks to Ian. Thanks to you all for listening to this episode of the podcast. Hope you've enjoyed the analysis and insight from everybody I interviewed. And now let's go from the horror of the British economic scene at this moment to the kind of schlock horror of this week's track, which is by Zombie Girl and is called Brains, Blood and Rock and Roll.